Hello and welcome to Booktopia On. I am Bronwyn.
I'm Cass.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Sarah.
Today we're talking about our biggest book obsessions. So this is a confessional podcast, everyone. So feel no shame.
So like the guilty pleasures or just...
There is no judging at Booktopia when it comes to books. So who wants to start us off with an obsession or a confession?
Well, maybe we should talk about one more. We're probably all obsessed about is the Harry Potter.
Yes.
And
then, I mean, it's not really shameful.
No, it's not just shameful. Good sense, good taste.
But I got to say, I mean, I only read them once as a kid, you know, in high school and all that. But recently I've started rereading them and it's reignited my passion. I don't think I was as obsessed when I read them first. I think now that I'm more of a bookish person than I was in high school, I'm extra obsessed. And I people can't see it on the podcast, but you guys can. I have a phone case now with all the, you know, Expelliarmus and Stupefy on it. And
gotta love the visual aids in the podcast.
Very true. Tracy,
I have the Marauder's map on my phone. So, okay, you and I need to quickly get some themed phone cases.
We do.
Mine's just a boring single colour.
No, you've got to embrace the bookish nerd side of things. I mean, I wear a lot of shirts. You know, my favorite sci-fi shows and all that, but I've got a couple from Harry Potter themed ones and I wear them to the gym. No shame. Everyone's there and they're serious, you know, Lorna Jane, Rebel Sport, and there I am straight out of the cupboard under the stairs on my t-shirt, you know. And
I like that.
I'm proud of my obsession.
I don't have any merchandise. Like, I'm not a big merchandise person. Oh, I love things crazily and passionately, but I don't buy t-shirts or bags.
Yeah. But only if it's for something specific, like all my themed things are generally shows or books or, you know, things like that I'm obsessed with.
I generally buy the themed stuff. I love Alice in Wonderland, so I have a dress that's a White Rabbit theme and then I have a skirt that it's an Alice in Wonderland theme, but it's not branded anything.
That's a little bit different to like official merchandise. Yeah. But I can actually say of the four of us sitting here, at least three of us have a crazy obsession that we come back to again and again and again in these podcasts. And Trace, yours is Alice in Wonderland. Mine is Jane Eyre. Bron, yours is Peter Pan. That's what would yours be?
I don't know. I feel like mine's yet to be decided. So.
Yeah.
Because I change my mind about things. Like, I'll be all about this for 6 months and then I'll drop off it completely and come back to it in like 3 years.
What's something that you've come back to more than once?
Harry Potter.
Okay, so.
It is, I think, for a lot of people, you know, like, it's not a love affair, it's your one, it's like a true love.
It's a
love.
Whole world to fall in love with.
Yeah. And I think it helps because of the environment that we're working in. There's so many other people that get your obsession.
Yeah.
And, like,
and don't look askance at you if you want to talk about what house you're
in. When you start talking about these book characters as if they were real people that you know, they know what you're talking about. You know, looking at you blankly.
That's it.
Yeah.
And take, for example, literally about 20 minutes ago, everyone, I got delivered a copy of Peter Pan. This is my third edition of Peter Pan, and that's me being restrained, you know. And I got to be a total dork in front of everybody, and I started quoting it out loud. And there's a serious obsession.
And you're
obsession.
In a safe space, Brian.
I am in a safe space.
We all have our thing.
Oh, God. And that, but in saying that, I mean, Peter Pan was probably one of my biggest obsessions as a younger Bron, in high school as well. I always loved it, always loved the cartoon. And then I saw the movie with Jeremy Sumpter, who, you know, I was the same age. I might have fallen in love. This is a confessional, I'm admitting. And then that's
young
when
Bron's
I...
heart awakened.
Yeah, I was like, oh,
awakened? Was awakened.
We're bookish people.
It became awake.
It was like, hello. And then I remember getting the book and reading it and being blown away by the original story because I hadn't actually read it. And most people haven't. And it just sort of solidified my love for the story. And then it sort of just progressed from there. And if I'm going to admit my shameful sin is I found...
can't wait for this.
A script of the Peter Pan movie online. But it was incomplete, so I went and I filled it out because I knew the movie so well that I didn't need to watch the movie to complete it. And I was so obsessed, and I still vividly remember printing it out after I typed it and having like a manuscript and my book. And then, you know.
Oh, my God. That is one of the best things ever. Every time I think you've told me the best secret about your Peter Pan obsession, you come out with something even better.
I'm just waiting to hear Bron's, like, secretly storyboarded, like, an animated version.
One day.
Actually, I understand more about you now, your obsession with Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. And because it's not... I think it made an impact as well because it's not really a happy ending.
No.
Like, it is, but they don't end up together, which is really sad. And Peter ends up being abandoned by everyone but Tinkerbell.
But he's got his lost boys.
They
all go back?
I think all of them do. Yeah. But he'll get new ones. You think he'll always get... There's always lost babies.
It's really funny when you read... Because last year, I think, we read the Lost Boy.
Yes.
A retelling of Peter Pan by Christina Hendry.
So it was fantastic.
It's really good. And she's written a few different retellings of things like Alice in Wonderland. But it does make you think about those stories differently.
It does. It changed my perspective completely. Yeah. That ending, I'm not going to say, but that last chapter shocked me. I just didn't know where it was going.
I've never read any Christina Hendry.
You need to read them.
One thing I really like about these, the world of like retellings and spin-offs, is that there are some, like Peter Pan, that... A lot of like books get written from the point of view of other characters or like retellings that are really like expand the universe and play around with it. And then there are other sort of fairy tales that just get retold more than
like Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast kind of only really has two characters in it. So there's not
it so much though.
Yeah. I love retellings but it is kind of interesting to note that the Beauty and the Beast universe hasn't really been expanded that much because it's kind of a small story.
True.
And there's not much room to...
The Candlestick?
Yeah. Well, some of... The Candlestick is a Disney thing.
True.
You can invent your own
schedule.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, this with Alice in Wonderland, I think one of the reasons I really liked it, and this is the book version, not the Disney-fied version of it, it's not the happy kind of tale that you... think it is.
That's the true of so
There's
many of
so
those.
So much more depth to it.
And that's what Peter Pan's like too. Yeah. You read it, you're like, okay.
I've been going around saying I've never read Peter Pan, but it was brought to my attention recently that actually I had Peter Pan read to me a lot as a child.
Yeah, but I mean that's not surprising that you wouldn't remember it. I don't really remember.
I do now because I remember things like, you know, the Wendy house and stuff that there were illustrations in this book that I do sort of remember it.
But the house they made Wendy,
Yeah, and stuff that you don't, that is particular to that edition. Like, I remember the illustrations. Yeah. But, like, you know, I won't trust us all to go straight to the fairy tale retellings place when we're talking about our guilty pleasures.
We are a little bit obsessed with fairy tale retellings because, like, it is fun. Like, we've all read Sarah J. Maas' retelling of sort of Beauty and the Beast and...
there's something nice about the reimaginings of them in all these forms.
I can rate my top five Beauty and the Beast retellings right now.
Go.
Okay, number one would be Hunted by Number two would be Beauty by Robin McKinley. Mm-hmm. Number three would be Heart's Blood by Juliet Millier. Number four, oh my God.
Pressure.
Number four would probably have to be another Robin McKinley one because she retold it twice.
Wow.
And she has another one called Rose Daughter, and I really like that one. Number five. I feel like I'm forgetting a really important one. I should not have boasted.
You can yell it out later if you forget.
There was an empty boast, everyone. I can only do four, apparently. One put on the spot.
Top four. Don't hear that very often.
It's a good number.
I will kick myself because I'll remember that it's one of my absolute favourites that I've forgotten. But
I love the Christina Hendry retellings of Alice in Wonderland and the Red Queen.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very much... I mean, the original books were dark, but these are darker than that. But she's got The Mermaid coming out very, very soon, which I'm really looking forward to as a retelling of Little Mermaid.
I'm going to have to jump on this Christina Hendry bandwagon. I'm such a fan of retellings.
Seriously, that was my first of hers, and I just... It was so good.
It was so good.
Aside from retellings, what else are our obsessions?
Oh, look.
I really love sort of those darkly sensuous titles. Like
Dark Fantasy.
Jacqueline
Never
Carey,
Night. Jacqueline Carey.
Those sort of things where It's just
speaks to your darkest
beautiful
side,
and sensual, but it is slightly that dark side.
Yeah.
Mm.
I love, like, Jacqueline Carey is one of my favorite fantasy authors. I love her Cushiel's Dart series.
Yeah.
I was absolutely blown away to recently find out that she's writing the first book from a different character's point of view, which, I mean, that's not usually my favorite thing. I'm usually of the opinion of, you've told that story. I don't need to see it from a different viewpoint. I've already read it. But this is an exception. I'm so excited.
And she's doing retellings of classic tales. So she's done...
The Tempest.
The Tempest, yes.
Yeah. And then Miranda and Caliban is the name of her Tempest retelling, and it's from the point of view of Miranda and Caliban, which
and her new the title one suggests. Starless, I think, is also a retelling from memory. That's my
Jacqueline Carey. But I, like, yeah, that's definitely one of my obsessions. I've got multiple editions of the Cushiel's Dart because I bought them all, and then they reissued them, and I was like, I like those covers, so I bought them all again. And then I found out, because then she's doing this new retelling of book one, which is going to be called Cassiel's Servant, when I found that out, I also found out they're reissuing all the books again, so guess who's probably going to buy it all again. I did the same thing with Isabel Carmody's Over Newton series. I have my whole original
series.
Well, not the whole one, because, like, I have up from book one to four in, like, the first editions that I ever owned, which are really old and battered. And then they did new covers, so I bought the whole series all over again. And I can tell you right now, if they do new covers again, I will rebuy it. Because I'm crazy.
I have a few series like that where I have multiple editions. I mean, Harry Potter, I have multiple editions. Lord of the Rings, I have multiple editions.
I do it with Georgette Heyer as well. Every time there's a new Georgette, they recover the Georgette Heyers. I'm like,
Well, I loved that. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. So I just rebought that in the new cover.
So one of our book obsessions would be buying the same books over and over again.
Well, I mean, so Peter Pan is not actually bad being three. I have an entire shelf at home dedicated to the Arthurian legend, which is my other obsession. And I have probably five or six different editions of Le Morte d'Arthur by Sir Thomas Malory.
What is it that makes you, like, because I do the same thing. I've got, I think, at least five editions of Jane Eyre, and I can't part with any of them.
Yeah,
they're all so beautiful.
Why is it that you? Because I don't.
I think we're all infected with the same sickness. We just love
it is a
books.
Sickness. Because
but I look at them and they're
the
all
same story
unique.
And in five different versions. No, the contents are exactly the same, but I will have some convoluted reason that I can't part with a single one of those.
But you have your one that's like, for my Le Morte d'Arthur, I have one that's like my beautiful display epic hardback with gold edges that I wouldn't, I did have once and I regretted it. I took it on the train because it's the only copy I had at the time. Yeah. But then you have your one that you'll read out in public, one that you'll read on, at home, and one that's just for display. Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
At least that's my logic behind it. Such I'm just obsessed with the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
I have some that I don't take out of home.
It's purely just to impress people. It's the ooh-ah effect.
Well, but is it because I enjoy reading them in that beautiful edition, but I'm not going to take it out.
No,
and
you're not
going to get battered and destroyed. Yeah. So I will buy the cheap paperback and have the hardcover.
So that you can
beat it up. Yeah,
or a leather-bound. I mean, I've got some leather-bound Tolkien novels that I would never ever think to take outside, because the paper's so thin.
Yes, it is. Like,
you've got to be careful with it. So,
yeah,
that's why you need multiple editions of those ones.
Exactly.
And sometimes I have them as ebook as well, or audiobook, so that I can listen to them on the go.
Oh, the number of times I've been on holiday or like not within reach of my editions, and decided I did it with The Wild Girl by Kate Forsyth. I was like, I'm on holiday. I own three editions of that book. Maybe I really want to read it right now on holiday. Ergo, I will buy the ebook so I can have it right now. And so now I've got an ebook and three editions of The Wild Girl.
Well, The Night Circus is one of my obsessions. Mm-hmm. I love that book. I have an ebook, audiobook, and the beautiful hardcover.
Mm.
Love it.
Oh, you guys all saw me buying those hardcover first edition reproductions of all the Agatha Christie novels. That's definitely another obsession of mine. All the Agatha Christie, Dorothy L. Sayers, that old school golden age crime. I have multiple editions of those books and I can't seem to stop collecting them.
I have to confess to a bit of an addiction to vampire kind of novels and witches and that sort of stuff. I like
Discovery of Witches series.
Discovery of Witches. not so obsessed now, but I used to be obsessed with Anne Rice. So I read her entire Vampire Chronicles plus the Mayfair Witches plus, you know, whoa, all of those.
That's a back catalogue.
And even things that people like Laurel K. Hamilton, who writes, she writes the Anita Blake vampire stories that started off really, really well and at some point just descended into just being sex.
Oh, my God.
Sex.
I was talking about this today. Yeah. Not this specific series, but as this will often happen in paranormal romance, which I do have a real weakness for. And but, you know, with a lot of those series, they start out strong and then the world gets more and more just complicated and more mystical things are added until it just gets out of control. So an example would be the Charlene Harris, Suki Stackhouse mystery.
Anita Blake is even worse. She starts out the series as a virgin, and by about halfway through, she's sleeping with about like 8 or 10 different men.
Yeah, I've heard this before about that series. So I've never read those.
And not all of them are human,
of course not.
So there's vampires. There's were kind of mix it up and kind
just
of stuff,
like,
you know,
tone
it's kind
it down. This is so the conversation. I literally had this conversation today, and we were talking about, I think we were talking about Patricia Briggs because I'm really into the Alpha Omega series. I really like that because it's set in a world that has a lot of different other creatures, but basically just sticks to the werewolves and I can handle one thing at a time, right? Just give me one thing at a time and I'll be fine. And then that led to a conversation about Kelly Armstrong because she's another one that I really like. Stuff, but she did the same sort of thing where she wrote a book. It was pretty, it was like a standard kind of mystery thriller. The characters just so happened to be werewolves, but it was quite, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but you know what I mean? It's quite grounded in reality, and I really liked that first book. It's called Bitten. They since made a TV show about it, which bears no resemblance to the book.
Is it always, like, the claw marks across the cover?
Yeah, it could be.
I think there's a couple of different covers.
The TV show was horrible.
I didn't even watch the TV show. I just looked at the promos for the TV show and was like, that's not my book.
I enjoyed that first book. And the
it
first
was good.
Few books,
the first few books were good, but then suddenly there's government agencies. And like, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy them. I definitely 100% read all of these books and liked them. Yep. But I think fondly of those initial ones where life was simple and it was just, you know, a murderous werewolf on the loose.
Not a government conspiracy.
As opposed to these like huge, like magical, complicated, there was wizard cabals, there was like, and it's, you know, it's weird, you know, you enjoy it and you like it and I'm sure I'll probably read all those again at some point. And I really like Kelly Armstrong. She's a great author and I really as well like her YA series that she writes in the same world. Super fun. Ooh. But I think it's a thing you find often in paranormal romance. It's like, let's start with a small concept and then we'll spin it out as big as possible.
Yeah,
we'll
so
add as
true.
Many different races of magical beings as possible, as many different love triangles as possible. And at some point I reach overload and I'm like, I gotta stop now.
So that might be an example of, you know, not necessarily a trope, but you know, the storylines that might turn you off. But what are ones that, is there a, you know, a trope or
that we
something
love, that we're obsessed
that,
with?
That is an obsession that if you see it, if you're, you know, reading the back of a book and you read it and hints at that trope, you're like, I'm dying, I don't even have to read the rest of that description, I'm gonna get it.
I have a big weakness for, and maybe this comes back to persuasion, but those second chance love stories. So if I read a blurb and it at all suggests that a relationship went bad and now they're back in the same sphere again, I'm like, I need to read this.
See, I mean, I like that, but I like to see the start of the romance. Like, I don't, I kind of don't
as someone
like when you start
who's
a movie.
Not a great run. The idea that you could like fix your past mistakes really appeals to me.
Time travel romances.
Time travel gets me.
Time travel is definitely an obsession of mine, hence the Outlander obsession.
Elizabethan England. Mm-hmm. Anything that's set in that time, like the rather weird, a few of the other books I've been reading recently that have been set in that time period. It's one of the reasons why I love the second book in the Discovery of Witches trilogy, because it's set back in Elizabethan England. I for some reason that time period kind of intrigues me.
Yeah.
But I also read about it in, because I like reading popular science and stuff. So some of my favourite pop science books look at the scientific achievements of that era as well. So it's kind of,
I like any kind of genre mash, to be honest. Like if it's any two things that you don't normally see together and someone's giving it a go, I'll be like, I want to see what that's like. Like, and one thing that I really love is when it's a kind of a crime or a thriller novel, but there's elements of a supernatural in it. So, like, with the Claire North books and, like, there's one that's coming out soon that I'm really excited about that's written by Carolyn Kepnes, who wrote You, which is soon to be a TV show.
So. Oh, is that? I saw that this morning. I didn't realize that was a book.
So that's a book. Oh, it's a series, in fact. There's two of them. So she wrote those books, and they're not, they're just like about a psychopath, right?
Yeah. But, I got that from the trailer.
But they're really, really, really good. But then she's now coming out with this new one that is being spoken about as like a kind of Stephen King / Stranger Things vibe. And it's got like a kid with some kind of psychic ability going on. I will jump on that. Anything that seems like it might be like a little bit like 11 from Stranger Things, I'm like, yes, I will read about the psychic child. Tell me more about the psychic child.
So you like your psychic children, okay. Yeah. I gotta say, I'm strangely obsessed with the whole enemies to lovers thing.
Yeah, that's always
or
fun.
Or friends to lovers, but particularly enemies
when
to
it's
lovers.
Bad, it's so bad though.
It is. Like, it's not believable, but I love when they start off bitter or angry and then, you know, over some trial that they go through, they start to fall in love and I'm like,
when it's good, it's really, really good. But when it's bad, it's like eye-rolling terrible bad.
If it can be written really, if it's written really well, it doesn't help if it doesn't hurt if there's some sort of explosive sex scenes and that kind of
sexual tension. I love an attentive sex scene,
What situation is harmed by that? Well, plenty, I suppose.
Yeah, but when it's done badly, it's such a hard slog to read through. Like, there was one book where it was, I put it down after like 60 pages because I was like, it's too ridiculous.
And
I think it was something to do with like they had an ex and then suddenly they fell in love with their friend and something happened and I was like, nah.
Yeah.
That sounds like one of those ones where human beings stop behaving like human beings.
That's pretty much
like, that's not possible. Yeah, I don't know anyone who does that.
This doesn't make any kind of sense. That's not
what
a human does.
The love triangles and all that get so complicated. So, I mean,
I hate love triangles.
Yeah, it just...
In general.
I just don't like too many characters because I don't read description very well. Like, I just skip to dialogue. So then if you're just like, oh, Jim from Accounts, who we didn't mention before, is here.
Can I please read the love triangle with Jim from Accounts in it? Because that sounds super fun.
That's right. Get it back to us.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to talk about... So your sort of book obsessions or confessions in general. So things like... the habits that you get into while you're writing or things like that.
Like reading the end first?
Yeah, like if there's something that you seem to do.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah.
Quite often.
I do it as well.
Which I can't fathom.
Life is short.
I do it if I'm not going to read the rest of the book.
Yeah, it's not that short.
You know that I don't believe in spoilers, right? So I don't think spoilers are a thing. I think that...
This is true. She does not.
If you can't ruin a good story by knowing what's going to happen. And
usually the end doesn't actually tell you what...
happens.
Often you'll check the ending and be like, wow, I really want to know how we get there. Yeah. And so then you read the book.
I can say that, but I just have never, ever, ever been tempted to read the end of a book. I just can't do it.
If I feel like the book is going in a place that I'm like, oh, geez, no.
Yeah.
Then I'll have to read the end just to check that we're going not in that direction.
Yeah, or that they're not killing off the character that you love because then that'd be too much to
too
deal
traumatic.
With.
Why put yourself through?
I'm okay to go through the death of a beloved character if it's done properly.
It depends on who the character is.
Yeah, because I like to get my heart ripped out, but it's just got to be done well. It's not... She's going to do it. Do it properly.
I mean, so have you guys ever, because this is something that I sometimes do when I read, is I tend to acquire habits from my favourite fictional characters. Like,
really?
Yeah, like I. Ever since I read Outlander, I now say Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ when I swear.
Oh my God.
Not always, but I'll just be walking and go, Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ, just like she does. And my mum and dad were like, what? Why are you saying that?
Actually, that happens to me when I read Bridget Jones. I start saying, I start writing V instead of very, and you do. And also, whenever I read any kind of Regency stuff, like when I'm not just
speak.
Some, yeah, like I start using those phrases that aren't.
You there.
Yeah, like. More like, you know, you just find yourself using words that you wouldn't ordinarily use. And, like, using more words than you
I often do that. I end up using words that maybe not used that much in the past, depending on the book that I'm reading.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that something like I tend to do.
Oh, and after I read any, like, J. Christoph, Amy Kaufman.
Do you go on a killing spree?
No, I start, like, sometimes, especially when I'm reading. No, Bronte.
I mean, there's a lot of death in all their books, so.
But you mentioned you're a new person.
You said this was time for confessions. So,
yeah, like, confess away.
No, I was just going to say, because those books have such strong banter game.
Oh, yes.
When I come out of one of those, I find myself, like, talking as though I'm in an action movie a little bit and being more like, with the one-liners. Just being a little bit more sassy. Like,
yeah, I do. I know. I do the same thing.
And you want to use their slang because their slang is so addictive. Yes.
And no one else understands what the hell you're talking about. And you're like, read this book. I have this thing as well that I do, again, being a confessional podcast, is that I sometimes, when I'm reading, will talk to the characters. Like, if something ridiculous happens, I just go, what are you doing?
Yes.
Don't go in there. Or like, you're an idiot. Or, sorry, our most recent example is that I was yelling at Umbridge.
Yeah.
Very, very, very angrily.
She's very frustrating.
She is. And I feel like they can hear me when I'm speaking to them.
That just means you're emotionally caught up. I love when that happens. Sometimes I'll be reading a book, and this often happens at the end of a book as well. If a book ends on a pitch perfect note and you feel like you've got everything emotionally. No, I hug it. And I'm like,
I stroke it.
Sometimes I'm like, you were so good, book. Like,
I put it down and I look at it lovingly and I sort of give it a stroke and I go, awesome. Like, congratulations.
And you say it out loud.
If it was like J. Christoph, I'd be like, well done, J. Christoph. Like, even though you can't hear me.
I have been known to talk to my books.
Oh, good. I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
We all share the same crazy.
This is true.
I don't think we're a fair sample of what is normal.
No. We need some non-bookish people in this podcast. That would be entertaining. The looks they would give us, like,
you talk to
with the looks that half the rest of Booktopia give us as they walk past the marketing department.
Right.
Every time we get
the fucking obsessed people, and we start making really loud noises.
Yeah, when our staff orders get delivered to our desks, and we like jumping up and down like it's Christmas time.
Pretty much. And we all have Christmas at Booktopia.
And we all have like really big towers of books on our desks.
Oh yes. My god! And
you can't
see
the person across from me.
It's like aspirational, it's right? Good. So the books on my desk are like, I'll definitely read all of these and review all of them. And then eventually it gets to the point where there's so many on my desk that I can't work. And so then you have to like cull them down. And sometimes I give myself like if it's longer than 6 months old, then you're not going to read and review it. So you have to pass it on to someone else who will enjoy it.
So generous.
And it's really hard. It's really hard because it's like, I want to read all of them.
Yeah, and it's
and the same thing happens at home because that's just the work pile. Yeah. At home, there's a whole other pile.
The home pile's even worse. Like,
a home pile's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I can't say no to books, particularly pretty books. Like, there's a book out at the moment called Circe that we all bought the hardcover special first edition, which is beautiful.
On my shelf, haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet.
I've read it.
So beautiful.
I read the proof copy because I don't want to touch the beautiful hardback.
It's gorgeous. I admire it every time I walk past it in my house.
You're
I'm like,
shiny.
Hey there. I've got it next to my gold Oscar Wilde book. And I'm like, you guys look great together.
I just got the proof of Melmoth, which is coming out later this year from Sarah Perry. I'm still going to order the beautiful hardcover.
Of course. Uh-huh. And see, that is something that, that is a definite confession of ours.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have to have pretty books.
And
in multiple
editions. Trying not to always buy hardcovers because
they're big.
The fact is they take up a lot of room and they are pretty and beautiful, but also they're more expensive, they take up more room, and it's excessive and crazy. So like so when I want to read something, I have a strict talk to myself and I'm like, first of all, Sarah, do you have to buy the physical book? Maybe it's available on ebook. Maybe you should just get it on ebook. And then usually I'm like, okay, possibly it'll be better to buy a physical one. So the paperback will be fine. You don't need the hardcover, Sarah. Just get the paperback one. But then I'll do a search on the Booktopia website and I'll see them side by side and I'll be like, maybe the hardcover needs to happen.
We all have a serious problem, listeners. You know,
love too much.
Give all of the money that we earn back to the company. Yeah. Every time we have a good financial year, I'm like, you just hired more book lovers.
Yeah. but we're all obsessed. We all have this addiction to books, but we all encourage each other to buy books.
Oh, we enable each other, for sure. Yeah. You and me sit next to Tracy and I are terrible. I'll be like, look at this one. And then we'll both put it on our wish list and then we'll both
all
buy
the time.
I think it's worse around Christmas.
You can justify, like, oh, I'm buying a present for everyone else. And then I'm like, oh,
I'm buying for myself.
Every present that you buy for someone justifies three books for you. It's like one for someone else, three for me.
Like, if we only did it at Christmas time, it wouldn't be so bad. But, like, it's every month when you, like, it's always that fun.
Every payday.
When you pay for it. How many book orders did I actually place to come out of my pay this fortnight?
And then you see it and you're like, that was a bad decision. But then
it was a good decision. Really.
I didn't do that, but I did buy a hot pterodactyl boyfriend that you and I was
talking about. Hot pterodactyl boyfriend. What is this book?
It's supposed to be like a parody of like a YA book or something.
It's a really quirky, funny book. It kind of reminds me of that book, and they're turning it into a TV show soon called Spontaneous. I forget.
I read the proof of that.
Yeah, it's like this book, Hot Pterodactyl Boyfriend. And again, I've forgotten the author. What's the author called?
I don't remember.
They have a name.
Like, it's in my room. I'm facing my bed.
Honestly, if you're interested, Google Hot Pterodactyl Boyfriend. Not many things. Oh my God, what might come up? I'm so sorry if something terrible comes up. Just Google it on our website. Go to Booktopia. Go to the search bar on our website and type Hot Pterodactyl Boyfriend and good luck spelling pterodactyl because
I don't know how to spell it.
There's a P starts with a P.
Yeah,
I think they spell it differently.
YTL.
Nice.
But it's a quirky, fun, crazy book and it plays on that trope, like let's call it the Twilight trope, where it's like, ooh, you know, this hot, mysterious boy has come to town. He's not like other boys. And blah, blah, blah.
And he's a pterodactyl. Yeah,
he has the head of a pterodactyl.
And a tail. Well, you know, I'm going to end this on that note before we get too carried away because I feel like this is just the scratching the surface of our book.
We should have a whole podcast just dedicated to YA obsessions.
Could we do a pterodactyl boyfriend like a review?
Spoiler zone, our new podcast, everyone. Spoiler zone, hot pterodactyl boyfriend. I would actually be up for that.
Yes, let's do that.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.